You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
Greetings. We welcome you to Quantum Leap Book Club. And we're actually still wandering through the Inner Earth book of Inside the Earth, The Second Tunnel by Radu Sinamar. And we're coming into some really difficult times to actually try to share what's in the book with you. So we're really hoping you have your own copy of this book and following along with us. And today who's joining me is Geraldine Dalby-Ball from Sydney, Australia. We have Rosemary Heyer from Frankfurt, Germany. We have Joyce Mollenhauer from Arizona, Mike Dillard from Montreal. And somewhere in there, I think we have Marianne Love from Melbourne. Am I missing anyone? Anyway, at this point, we are ready. We will not have Trina Cooper with us this week. She's traveling and doing some teaching and programs. So as we come into today, we're looking at some really heavy material. So I'm saying to my co-hosts who are going to be particularly sharing this and working with this, in a manner to keep your enthusiasm and your excitement up with the material, which I know you are very excited with this book, okay, we're actually dealing with a lot of material over the next couple of programs to where there's more teaching in it than actually storyline. I think you'll agree with that. So actually taking time to explain what you're actually seeing on a few pages here. And then when we get through with actually reviewing some of the in-depth pages that we're looking at, especially when we start this week on 94, there's a lot of diagram and particular information in the illustrations, again, that I say to you, we really need you to have this book to enjoy every bit of what is exciting about it. The illustrations help you understand the difference in the teachings they're giving too, as I said, but their storyline here, yes, but in that storyline, there's a tremendous amount of teaching and information being given. And so when you're looking at the particular drawings and stuff that accommodate the pages, it breaks up the really heaviness of the text. So I'm hoping, again, like I said, please go out and get this book. Even after we're through reading it, it's worth a run through again, definitely for you listeners. And so we're going to be starting on page 94, and we're going to actually let a few of our co-hosts actually try to deliver to you some of the intricate amount of teachings. And as we can, I want to say to my co-hosts, if there's places along in the pages that you're covering that you really feel the need to share some of the written, written part of it, I'm okay with that. And I'm sure our people would be, because at this point, anything that you feel can help you discuss the in-depth amount of this teaching. And there's just a lot of very definite text here. It's almost worth our reading all the way through it, but we don't want to have to try chew up an hour of just reading a book to you. So we're going to start with Geraldine in Sydney, Australia, and let her cover our first page here and the illustrations on 94. And welcome, Geraldine.
Absolutely. What a wonderful place to start, right in the thick of it, or as we're saying, maybe not the thick, maybe the hollow part of it. And this indeed is a very good reason to have the book, because it's great to have this graphic. So I will talk through the graphic and through the experiment and touch on what we have spoken about previously, that if science shows one thing, it doesn't mean that's the thing. So stay open to alternatives. And that's what we're looking at right now, because the so-called Cavendish experiment was based on lead balls. And the Earth, she is not a lead ball. So right from the beginning, we don't have something exactly the same. But what it says is the reason why there's a belief that the Earth is not hollow is because when we get a seismic wave, that means a wave that's been caused by a volcano, that it can't pass through the hollow area, and therefore we don't pick it up. And that's the only reason to say Well, it must be solid because we get the waves moving through and we pick them up on the other side. That's as simple as all of this is. But then there is information to show we can move through the lower density at the center of the Earth.
Yes, that's a good coverage of the illustration you're trying to get. I kept waiting for you to use your hands, Geraldine, because usually when you're describing the illustrations, you start drawing them in the air for us. And to our listeners, we're actually doing the first recording in Zoom so we could see each other. We could see how we're doing our expressions and our drawings, okay? And you'll have to just be safe going along with that in our book. And especially when we start making some of these shows podcasts, we're hoping that that'll help you even have greater appreciation for what we're trying to share here with you. Okay, we're going to go to 95. And we're going to let's see who's in order for that. You guys got your list there? Okay, that would be Joyce. Joyce, yes. Over there.
Yes, it is. So then we go back to some of the discussion that we've already had, that the scientists want very much to prove that the inside of the core of the Earth is solid. So they had this scientist that they put their whole faith into that did a laboratory experiment in 1799. And here we are in 2021. And this Mr. Cavendish is still what he assumed with his experiment. He worked with lead balls, two lead balls that have absolutely nothing to do with electricity. And the Earth moves totally in an electrical field. So he is kind of ignored and didn't even acknowledge that there was electric there with the Earth. And he tried to prepare an assumption that would prove in his experiment that it was solid inside the Earth. So everything that he said was just an approximation. He had nothing to prove on it. And we'll be talking more about Cavendish as we move along here.
Okay, and let's definitely hear from Rosemary to pick it up from there. Rosemary?
Yeah, thank you. Well, as we have heard, it's not valid. It's actually not electrical neutral. That's how Dr. Chen says it and what the scientists like to believe. The Earth is neutral. It's not. I mean, we even know that when we live in the Earth, that it's not neutral. There's a static electricity, which is giant influencing gravity in very, very strong way. And also the magnetic field of the Earth is there, and that influences gravity. So there's no electrical neutrality here, which they like to believe so they can prove that the Cavendish experiment works. It doesn't work. And all these electromagnetic forces are known to be trillion times stronger than gravity. So they are there and they're influencing gravity, and that has been completely left out. They believe there is no electricity on the planet. And also what we're seeing is that if these are not true, it means actually what Dr. Chen says, that the Earth might weigh less or might weigh more than they expect it to be. And then we're coming to that section called problems with gravity. That is another big thing. They don't understand gravity. They don't know the magnitude of gravity. And they don't even understand the speed of manifestation of gravity. They cannot explain where gravity comes from, and they do not understand how it works on a micro level in a nucleus. So they're trying to prove that Earth is solid, but they don't understand at all the gravity of it. So he's making a very big point in this whole chapter to trying to say that science is just really on wrong assumptions, and he's putting a lot of examples in that.
And we have to pay attention to the fact that when this information and this particular doctor was given this information, all they had to that they could work with was what they had done fundamentally in digs and actually using whatever they've learned from the digs on the surface or in the caves. Okay, now we have computer and technology that actually looks through, can actually have like X-rays that look through to the center. Okay. So it's kind of unfair for people that are trying to actually determine and teach the public what they know about the Earth when they don't really know any further than their hands and their eyes could touch, right? So actually, at this point, I'm hoping that this book actually tells a lot of people, you just can't go by the textbook that you're reading. You have to look at the data on it and see how much now technology has influenced all of the old knowledge and thoughts on Earth and a lot of things in our life that is now changing. Okay, and so let's move on. And Mike Dillar in Montreal, are you there? Mike?
Yes, I am. Basically what we're talking about here is the problem with gravity. Little is actually known about gravity. The nature of the force has not been described, nor how it works. It only is really described by the effects it produces. Its source is unknown, and its behavior can't be described at the quantum level. So scientific studies depend on what's called the gravitational constant to predict the force of gravity. I've got some information on that I'll share with you in a bit, but this value has been determined based on a formula. But all formulas suffer from severe limitations of approximation and adjusted figures, like rounding off. He says rigidly applying formula is slave thinking, but something routinely done by scientists. Formula by themselves aren't meant to be the foundation of any scientific discussion, especially when the field or the scope is so complex and outside the traditional conceptual point of view. Well-trained scientists who have developed a strong inner sense can come to an understanding of the limits of when an equation or formula should be applied. They know when to use it and when the limits of its applicability have been passed. But it's difficult to change deeply rooted old perspectives and replace them with new ideas. This is especially true with scientific dogma. There are many variables that can affect gravity, yet scientists claim that gravity acts the same within the Earth as it does on the surface by automatically applying some of these equations. And they base it on measuring the effects of two iron balls that are a few centimeters in diameter and deciding that the Earth that's 12,500 kilometers in diameter behaves the same. He says that there are so many variables, forces, and effects that are not taken into consideration that you have to wonder what their experiments are actually measuring. How can one possibly consider that gravity 3,500 kilometers deep inside the Earth is the same as that 1 to 2 centimeters deep inside a little iron ball? And then use that conclusion to develop the theory that the Earth is solid and rigid in the interior. It's all right to design experiments using certain assumptions, but the mistake scientists make is forgetting about the assumptions and starting to consider them strict laws.
Well, we have to look at the fact that within our time, within our particular time here, 2021, we can just think back a few hundred years when they thought the Earth was flat. So at least they're calling it round, okay? At least they've advanced to being right. Round. And we're going to get better as we grow along and evolve, I'm sure. Okay, Marianne Love in Melbourne, Australia, you there?
Yes, I am. And it just shows, just from what Mike's saying, just how fragile this base is for understanding the inner Earth when it's based on the G-force being constant, when we've already shown in science that you dig a little deeper, you go into the cavities of the Earth a bit more, and they're actually showing that the G-force is not constant and in fact speeds up. So then how can you base all these theories on something that can't even be proven even in today's sciences? But understand they're pretty attached to their theories, but slowly bit by bit in this book, Radu's showing us how it just gets chipped away, and leaving us open, I think, to just exploring what is there. And they discuss here on page 98 about the fact that electromagnetism actually influences gravity. And there has been some experiments showing that, using through a solar eclipse, how the electrical charge on the Earth is actually massive at that point. And an Austrian experiment of physicist Erwin Saxel actually showed that influenced pendulums. So there's a lot of theory chipping away at this idea that G-force is constant and not influenced by electromagnetic fields and the inner Earth. So, and the other idea brought up in this is in this page is the whole theory about where does the heat from the inner Earth come from? How are, rocks and melted so that they become volcanic molten? Like what is going on there? And one idea is, maybe it's coming up from the inner Earth, molten rocks, hot, rocks coming up from the inner earth, but this isn't really possible thinking of the distance it would travel. It'd be solid by then, like it couldn't be. So then they're like, oh, okay, so maybe it's then in cavities within the earth. But still, it's actually a mystery about where is this heat in fact coming from.
Yeah. And some of the things, like if you just, anyone who's actually following us with what we're reading, just get on the internet and explore some of the information. Just like right now, what we're asking you to do is to be open-minded. We're sharing something that excites us. We're not trying to convert anyone to a different thought. Just be open and at least listen to what's happening and see what you feel about it. But one of the things that's happened is that recently, because this is high ceremony time, a couple of elders came from the north, and the coastal people on the western coast of our North Canada and even further up into the what I would consider the very north point and the ice cap of the north. And they were sharing, okay, when we were talking about this, and of course, everywhere, where for me, whenever I'm like really involved in anything, everywhere I go, somebody brings up something about it, you know, and it's like everybody, I must be broadcasting it in my aura that now I'm reading this book on the internet, you know, whatever. But anyway, they shared that the what we consider mermaids, and that there are people who live in the waters of our surface that have actually found ways to come through the inner earth up to the surface waters in our oceans and our seas. And then for safekeeping and how they've actually survived all these years, and especially recently over the last 10 years, because the Navy and our scientists have been doing a lot of sonic exploring of the ocean ways and getting, you know, trying to get more information. And it has really affected what they consider these water people, or who we've heard our mystical stories of, called mermaids. Okay. And so they actually resolve in the waters, the actual, what they consider the lake in the inner earth. And what they got through sharing with me, what they said, I mean, I had to sit all the way while we were driving back. I didn't want to hear the radio or anything. I didn't want my husband talking to me. I just had to digest what they had said. And they weren't talking from a book. They weren't talking from anything they read. They don't read. They live a very, what I would consider, very pure life, okay? And they have no influence of TVs, radios, and all of that. And what they were sharing with me would outdo Star Wars and anything else I've seen on the silver screen. So it's like they actually are very familiar with the life form of that which comes to us on the surface occasionally from the inner earth. And like they, when they begin to describe these particular water people, okay, what they begin to share actually is something that come up on some of the particular information places. I think has to be like maybe 10, 15 years ago that we were actually seeing little clips through the internet and Facebook and stuff to where they had actually found some of these mermaid people who had been washed up on the beach because of the fact that the sonic sound and things that the Navy was doing, and that they actually took these people away. But one little boy happened to keep his phone on and took pictures of these people and what was taking place there. And when she described these people, she actually said in features, one of the elder ladies, and she said the features are that very much of the people who live in Australia. And she described that there's some of the people who have a very flat face, their eyes are very inset and everything. And I've actually been to Australia quite a few times and have seen people with the features that she's describing. And in her mind, she says, and they actually had children with the people of the land. So I'm eager now to look into this for Australia, because a lot of what we consider the natives there actually have this particular feature. And I'm very interested in seeing it. She says their DNA is actually part of what the people are in this inner earth, the water people of it. So, I mean, everywhere it's at, we find new ways to look, and we live in a world of just majestic wonders and exciting things. I don't know how come we get lost in the negative, and that how we dwell on some of these just insane things that are even now happening. And when there's just so much more there that awakens in us what we are, how we have evolved, and the actual powerfulness of what we are as a being. and beginning to awaken now in the evolutionary process of us actually being a very powerful conscious being. And I'm excited about that. So we'll just go on and keep following this book and see if it comes to any particular information more on that. So we're going to cover the next 3-4 pages by actually just discussing. So we'll go back and let Geraldine start again. And Geraldine, is there some parts of the next few pages that you were particularly interested in sharing?
Yes, because as you said, when you do research based on the book, new information comes and it does move around in your mind. So what I was looking at as I was researching the drilling, because I thought, well, here's something physical. Let's have a look. And looking at the photos and the stories from particularly the Russian drill that was done, because that's one of the deepest. And the information that came meant that even in this very shallow look, like I'm talking, you know, at maximum 12 kilometers or like almost 6 miles, which is a tiny piece of the crust, the information already didn't fit the scientific theory. So then one would say, oh, that's interesting. Science lets us know that when we observe something different, we go back to the theory and have a look. But that's not what's being done. So in general, but that's what we're now being invited to do. Some of the things that were found, for example, is the theory says that as one moves from the crust further inwards, that the rocks, that the temperature goes up. And yet the one in, and they say it goes up like 1 degree at a time. But what they found was it was almost in some places twice as hot as they had thought. And in other places, they found that it was actually cooler deeper down than higher up. And when I was reading these articles, and these are just published papers on the internet, and I allowed my mind to see what had been described in previous pages of the book about the honeycomb and, you know, the different pockets, and some have lakes and some are warm and some are cold. What the science was actually finding through even these very shallow drills was what the book has described as you know, what's being presented here as the actuality. There's hotter parts, there's cooler parts, they're up higher, they're down lower. There's magma in some areas and not others. And it allows us to then say, oh, let's re-question this, because temperature was one and density was the other. They said that it gets denser. And yet when I went and read, I probably read like 12 or 13 actual articles and looked at the photos, and the Russians had invited many people, many scientists from around the world to come and look at the rocks that they were pulling up from deep, because they were actually less dense deeper down.
Perfect.
Yeah. And so they'd just make a new theory and say, oh, it's probably because there was more air bubbles mixed in or something, or maybe it was a bit volcanic. And amazingly, they also found fossils of life forms like algae, primitive algae, 2.5 kilometers down. That wasn't on anybody's radar. But did that make front page news to say, hey, something is so different from how we expected? It hasn't, but it took me 5 minutes to Google it. It is all there. So it's very exciting, and it rocks the stable foundation. Like, not to use a pun of rocking a foundation, but it's really telling us what we've been told as this is as it is really needs to come back, is this is a perspective. So open up and have a look at other perspectives.
And with love your sharing, we're learning along with that, with our own anatomy and physiology. What our bodies are is actually the same as what the earth is. We're actually realizing the similarities or the actualities of how our body represents what the planet is. So like I said, especially with the water levels, the earth is 70% water, so is our body. So there's a lot there trying to find a way to come forward in the knowledge to be with us. And all you have to do is just keep looking, keep an open mind. And soon the pieces start fitting, and all of a sudden you have a real clear view of exactly something you could have never, ever read about, because it wasn't happening then. We have to remember that this book was wrote in 2017, and this is how far we've come in just 4 years, okay? So, I mean, I think we're moving at some rapid speed and definitely going to see a whole lot more come out of all of this, especially now that we're actually focusing through Nassim Hyraman's work on gravity, as well as what we're looking at in black holes. So there's a lot more on the scene. We just have to keep looking, right? So I'm going to let Joyce, actually, Joyce, would you like to share some of the particular information you got?
Sure. That I've been interested in how over the last maybe 20 pages, there's been just comments about the seismic waves. So here we are, we're finally looking at it in a little bit more detail. And I love the fact that he says, this is a quote, "The situation is almost hilarious." Well, the humor comes because some of it is so absurd that the Russians and the Germans have both done some digs way into the earth and come up with totally contradictory answers to what scientists wanted to believe. But science doesn't, some science, and they're definitely saying, this isn't all scientists, that there is a group that are starting to actually realize there's a whole lot that they don't understand yet. But I was intrigued that the author actually made the comment that the scientists that are starting to be open-minded are cautious about being honest, because it can actually make their reputation less in the science field. So I think a lot about Nassim Harriman, who went totally out of the box and has proven things way beyond what traditional science believed, because he had the courage to step out of the box. So this is such a reflection on all of us. How many times have we believed something for years and years of our lives? Not as absurd as thinking the earth was flat, but sometimes very personal things that affect every day. And then suddenly a light bulb comes on and we think, how did we ever sit in that seat? So I like that kind of aspect in this book.
I do too. And you have to laugh, or you'd have to be very heartbroken when you have to laugh at it. And it is true. So we're going to go to Rosemary back in Frankfurt, Germany. Rosemary, you like to share some things on these last pages?
Yeah. Yeah. Just referring back to Geraldine and Joyce, just to undermine what they were saying, I just want to make it more clear. One point is that the deepest drill, or the deepest mine they have been able to make, was 8 to 10 kilometers deep. And the deepest drill they were making is 20 kilometers. Now, the radius of the Earth is 6,600 kilometers. So, I mean, how can they generalize and make assumptions from this tiny little thing in the crust? They kind of dipped in, so to speak, you know, and said, oh, it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter, so it must get really hot, always hotter. And then, as we have heard from Geraldine and Joyce, it isn't. It is very, very different. And now the new thing is, as you said, grandmother, is that they're using seismic waves. And he's saying that is a valid way to look at the Earth. I mean, basically how we could think is the wave goes through the Earth, and then they're watching what kind of resistance or what kind of things are happening to the wave while it's going through it. But again, they're generalizing. I mean, they're saying that the wave is actually the same everywhere around the Earth, but it isn't. It is very different on different spots. And they generalize that there's a certain relief or a certain structure in the Earth due to the seismic waves. And what they find out is that there is holes there, and so cavities. And so they think, well, there's cavities. Well, something must have happened to the density or to the rocks. Maybe they were, I don't know what the word was, but it sounds so funny, like they get flexible. The layers of rock are suddenly flexible. and before that, they were trying to make the point, it's very dense and it's getting more and more dense and more hot and more dense. So they're adjusting their assumptions when they realize that the seismic waves, which is a more precise way to actually understand the inner of the Earth, also proves that they cannot generalize. And that's probably something that's been really big headache for them, that everything they assumption have is they cannot generalize.
Okay, well, we're going to have to move on. Mike, can you pick it up from there? I think she's froze.
Yes, I can, sure. To me, this whole section is kind of mind-blowing in a certain way, especially to someone who's gone and through a lot of formal studies, where somebody like myself, formulas and equations are like, you know, my favorite buddies. I mean, I work with formulas and equations day in and day out. And, you know, you come to rely on them. And what this, I think the impact that this is all having on me is the degree to which we've been willing to go from approximations in measurements, and we know all measurements are approximations, and adjusted measurements. And the first time I read it went in the book when he used that word adjusted measurements, and then he said rounding up, it made me realize that a lot of times people will do that without understanding. So if it's, I'm giving an example, 2.5, you say, well, that's 3. Okay, well, 2.5 to 3 is like 20%. And you just gave away 20% of something and you don't know what you did with it. So, you know, these errors come in and they're insidious. They sneak into these formulas and people don't realize it. And we think they are like the, you know, like they've got the royal blessing. This is it. This is all it is. Not true. They're approximations and at best trying to describe what's going on. You know, they may work good enough for me when I'm putting up a building, but let's not try to go from here to, you know, Alpha Centauri or something. And you know, when we were talking about drilling into the Earth and the distance, I tried to find something for me that would put it into perspective. And I realized it would be like driving across the United States and saying in the first 15 miles, oh, I know what it's going to look like. I mean, that's the distances we're talking about. So, you know, just how ludicrous is that? And this is kind of what comes through stronger and deeper. And then how I think Rosemary was talking about how when that information comes out, it's just totally squashed. I mean, Tesla is a super example, probably one of the most brilliant and most impactful scientists that ever lived. And you never hear about him in school. It's only recently we're starting to hear about him. You know why? Because he didn't fit the mold, and the powers that be didn't like what he was saying. So it was like, push all that to the side. I love going through the back pages of some of these news programs and seeing what they're talking about, because it's never what's on the front pages. So that's what hit me.
It's true. It's true. And not only that, but one of the things in our favorite person we keep talking about, Nassim, is how he actually really broke through. I mean, the scientists hated him because he asked questions and showed examples that they were ignoring. And when he would say, you know, when we're looking at this and we're dismissing all of this, you know, why are we not counting? What do you mean this doesn't matter? What is it? You know, how can you say it doesn't matter? You don't know what it is. And we get to where we begin to accept. Just because we give some people such authority, don't we? We give, if you get a title, we all of a sudden we all become stupid, and this one is knows everything. And even if we don't accept or we have questions about it, we're belittled for having questions about it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's nothing other than how we succumb to fear and to actually back down because we give our power away and let someone else make us incorrect. And right now, that's what's changing. And that's why there's so much controversy in the world. You know, we are looking at the individuals now. We are looking at how individually we do have questions. And we need to begin to trust that those questions bring answers that we are here to give, that we are here to add to the intelligence. So I'm loving this. And it's like, we definitely have, when I look at Nassim, and I'm looking forward to personally meeting him, he's one of the few people in all of this that I have not had direct ability to hug and congratulate him to the genius that he is. But it's there, I know I identify to the rebel. I identify to someone who just won't accept the box, you know? And I've been that myself all my life. I've got questions that I need answers to, and I will persist. And the more you tell me it doesn't matter, the more I know it must matter to more because you don't even want to talk about it, okay? So it's happening now. And this book is one of those things. Don't you feel like the book that we're reading is actually stirring up so many questions and actually changing so many mindsets? So actually, like I said, please, our listener, get this book. You owe yourself actually going through it piece by piece and then listening to it. It wouldn't be harmful for you to re-listen to our show and actually see some of our own projections from it. But there is so much here. And such a change. And I love how the author has actually taken time to change what I would call the hardcore ignorance. Okay. And actually helping, because he plays the character of someone who's victim to some of those opinions and thoughts, right? And then he merges out into the wisdom of his mentor and teacher. So it's really cool. And it's an easy way to learn and digest. I love how he's done that. Marianne, what do you have to add to the last page?
Yeah, I think reading this, I was getting really confused about why are people so invested in holding on to what they already believe? And I guess as a psychologist that I can kind of identify with that because I help people and myself through that all the time. But, you know, I just sort of see like, oh, we're stuck, you know, but I came to this not really looking into what was in the inner earth in the first place. So I'm learning about what does the scientist think and now what is the current science is showing. And so I was confused, why are you holding on to the G-force being constant? Like, who cares, you know? Let the G-force move with the electromagnetic fields, you know. But I guess I understand why, the scientists are getting very intensely committed to their beliefs. And he was saying in here how even when it contradicts, they go back and change the theory slightly enough in order to validate how that could contradict. So to keep the original theory the same. And, you know, looking at it, like if, you know, going into the inner earth, how can you come out explaining that? Like, how can you go into the inner earth and come out with a scientific explanation of what you experience there? Like, from what I've read, most people can't even find words. They think it's a dream. Like, they don't even know barely what's going on. Some know what's going on, but there's no science to validate. Like, there's just a big leap between what's programmed neurologically in our brains, in many brains, and then what could be described, you know, it's a bit like describing God or something, you know. How do you do that?
I hear you. And in your profession, you're as a therapist, you've got to try to help unlock some of that hardwired conviction and get people to open up and actually see a better life and a light at the end of the tunnel, right? So I'm just watching what's happening overall in the world. And it's not just on North America, it's all over the world that people are going through these huge controversial changes and everything. And one of the scary things in us relating to the fact, okay, what really is happening is evolution and intelligence is finally being set free and given to us. And one of the things I've run into over the last 3 weeks is that here, and I'd imagine in other countries, I haven't gotten up to date on that yet, but here in the United States, the CNN, the channel, the news channel, CNN, is actually forcing, our school system is forcing our children to listen to them for 1 hour a day in their classrooms. And they're actually telling the children not to believe what you and I are talking about. They're actually trying to keep them in that shell, and they're discouraging children to open themselves to some of these new ideas or what they consider these insane people. Okay, so it's like we are really a threat. What's happening today and the information you and I are discussing and even the book itself is actually that which is being feared. Whatever that particular power or that source is, they're terrified of us actually beginning to see the reality. And science then is the greater threat. And then I just look back, and I know all of you are there with me because you studied most of the same things, to where years back in the beginning, like we'll talk a few hundred years or maybe a couple thousand years, to where as religious people, we were forbidden to even associate with science. And if you're a scientist, you got staked up and burnt as a heretic. So you really, when you look at all the things that you and I can look at today, and I ask our listeners to be open to looking at that. If you just review the last maybe 3,000 years of humanity's evolution, you don't have to go back. I mean, there's far, far more way back there, yes. But before you deal with that, and before maybe you can even begin to deal with that, you have to deal with this that's more recent, which has flowed right into our present state, and how over and over and over again, these very powerful particular heirs, whoever they may be, this era is actually in the dark ages again, and that we're being brought back to being forced to listen to whatever that power is and actually not go any further. And what more to judge that, and what is the very intelligence that's going on with that is definitely controlling people through fear and misinformation. And so when you, like, just within ourselves, Michael's been there with me in some cases, some of you have been in other situations with me, and the things that we experience and stuff, especially with all the ceremonies I do, I could never expect a normal, regular person, and I don't, what I mean normal, people in a box, okay, and that just do the 9 to 5 and go to church on Sunday and do whatever the regular role of life is for them. I could never have conversations with them, and I would rightfully understand that they would be afraid of me and actually think I'm insane, or I am a habitual liar, okay? Because I've experienced things that they couldn't even possibly relate to because they are locked into that system. And a book like this is talking about the inner earth. I mean, most people haven't even dealt with the surface of the earth and not even acknowledging how much of a mystery and how much wonder is already just in the surface. And then to take it to that level of our inner earth, and we're just exploring the inner earth. What about the universe? What about just a few miles out? We've got a probe out there walking around and testing and everything, Mars, you know? I have people that watch the news every day, and I talk to thousands of people, okay? Every day is thousands of people. I get 17,000 emails a day, for crying out loud. And so there's people that don't believe that there really is a probe up there on Mars. They believe it's some evil that's trying to make us believe that. And so they can't possibly, and there's an innocence to it. And that when we're reading this and we're talking to our listeners, we're actually inviting them to be in the safety of our net, where we're just as willing to talk more outlandish than they could possibly read in this book, okay? To where that they could peacefully and trustingly look into something bigger and better. And then what I love about it is this, whilst this may not be totally comprehensive to persons who kind of live that straight line of life, begins to ring in them, because deep down in our souls, deep down in our being, we know, and we're drawn to those questions. We're drawn to understand that. We're drawn to discover. And it's in that part of us that we stand on common ground, no matter how far or how limited we may be in experience and acceptance. And so as we on our show bring in these books and stuff, we're introducing people to things that they would never reach for themselves. And they're just looking for a little bit of entertainment and something. And so with the impact that people feel from you and from me is the experience that we have had that actually spawns and spurs us on to further deep studies and excitements and explorations. And it's like some of that that you want to relate to, and why any one of you could share this. Why have you actually been drawn to this book? You know, what does this book stimulate in you? Because you are somebody like myself that has been through many paths and many journeys. And a lot of them are, we've done it together, okay? So when you're looking at this book, what would you hope that our listeners, especially those who have not had the journeys we've had yet, okay, what would you want them to take from this? What are you hoping that they hear from what you're sharing? Anybody?
I would say that you want people, or I would like people, to simply consider that what we know now isn't everything. And that there's a lot of other stuff out there we don't know, and it could be anywhere. And just to be open to that possibility.
And we're just scratching the surface, right? I mean, yeah. What we're looking at here is just a scratch on the surface and everything else we're looking at. Who else would like to say something?
Geraldine? A key thing that's come out a number of times is, I've always loved, as you said earlier, that we are, our body vessel is a mirror of the earth, whether it's the percent water, the minerals, all the rest. This book has taken me to a completely different perspective, that when I look at, for example, the figure that's on page 107, which is another model which shows a relatively small so-called empty interior or the black hole, and then the density. Well, let's go from outside. High density outside, we're normal. High density solid. Then the density decreases, meaning it's less solid, meaning it's more potential to be anything, into the middle where it's potentially anything, which relates to the black hole. You know, the particles are there. Then it's up to us. So I've been able to look at the earth, which I absolutely love and adore, and realize my spiritual journey. So each person's spiritual journey is also embodied in the earth when we go from solid, saying that's how it is, to being less dense. And that word has two meanings, dense as in stupid and dense as in particles that have more space between them, to the point where we're actually letting go completely of identifying something as a thing, which is the center of the earth, which then relates to many esoteric studies of the blackness or the void. So each time I look at this diagram on page 107, it's almost like seeing myself inside out, because I used to think I'm the dense thing, and then I get less dense here, which may be called my aura. And then out there, which isn't really out there was the nothingness. And what the earth has shown me is it's the other way. That out there, the everything is in the middle. And so when I look at the earth, I see that it's not actually that in meditation you feel like you go out there, but what you're actually feeling is no longer identifying as a solid thing, no longer identifying just as the crust. And so that's what I think is beautiful, that the earth again is the mirror for who we are and how we can be.
Whilst I've spent most of my life, and what you've just described is so, so heartfelt, what I've learned in most of my life, I've had an intrigue and a hunger that I hang out with all these scientists. And I mean, I crave, it's like my major diet is just finding wisdom and information. It's like I just drink it and eat it. I live on it, okay? And so with that aspect, these are all the people, and I seek people like Nassim Harriman, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and the people who are looking further, way further into the reality of us, not looking out there in that environment, but looking into that area, going deeper and deeper into that that is us, of the being of us, okay? And realizing that in this 80 years of life that I have been journeying and just enjoying and having just, I don't even know how to describe when I think about my age, and I think people think, well, she's probably going to die pretty soon or something. I think about that and I laugh because I feel like I'm 30 and I'm going to live to be another 80 years. Okay. But in all of that, for me, the excitement is also having the pure, unedited version of everything we're reading that science is saying and how extraordinary we think it is. And then I go to these little places, these little villages, these little, you know, kind of in the corner places of the earth. And you see someone there with lots of timelines on their face and their skin's kind of leathery. And I'm attracted to them. I love them. They're beautiful. And I want to be close to them. I want to hold their hand. And when I do, I begin to ask questions. And what they know didn't come from a book. What they know didn't come from the research. What they know didn't come from anything written. It come through the lineages and the stories and the wisdom of their people. And in that, they tell you so much more than even what we're reading. And to find out how many of them talk of inner earth firsthand, like you and I would talk about going down to the swimming pool or right over there to the lake. You know what I mean? It's just a natural part of their day. And so more in depth than what we're having the scientists tell us about and how they see it and what they know and what they've learned from it. And many of the stories of them who journey between these particular worlds. And actually the statement that I've had in that, and it seems like every season of ceremonies, there are other people that come. I look for the familiar ones and some of them are there, but also I look to the new faces that's come because I realize this is new information that's being sent in. And I definitely make myself a student at their feet. I just want to know everything. And so basically the things they're sharing and how we are awakening now to our part of this, to our actual role in this, we, the beings, the humans, and that it's in us that this changes is coming, that all of this stuff of this all mulling around in the environment and the power plays and all of the darkness, the shadows and everything. It's like when I first come into what I would consider mainstream spirituality or New Age, and everybody in meditations was going into light, surrounding ourselves with white light and everything. And I would sit with that, because my whole root, the start of everything of this for me, was to go into the blackness. And you all know my story on this, because I would not talk about the blackness, because I realized they're going to think that's the devil and that's evil. Okay, so they're talking about the white light, you know, and you start talking about this blackness and that you reside in the blackness, and that was never heard of. And then, like I said, I had to sit silent for another 25, 30 years until Nassim come along and actually made his entrance and took the wave or the smacking around of that and being called all the bad names, when he actually said that we're all black holes and nothing exists that isn't a black hole. And then we begin to actually look at that. And it was always going into forgetting about the skin we wear, forgetting about the body that we think is us. But going into the blackness is going into the nothingness before all of that, before the body, before the mind, before the thoughts, before the stuff, before the things. And finding that part of ourselves, that seed of the one that is in everything. And that then we begin to explore ourselves in that oneness, and that each of us have this individual piece of it. You do not have to compete or ploy against each other. Each one of us are so original. They're in this fingerprint says nobody in the world is the same as you. And what we know, or what I would consider the ancient ones teach us, no one ever was or ever will be the same as you are right now. And can you think about that in time? Can you equate what that means? And here you sit. And here we have all of this impressing people with ignorance, teaching them to be still, to lock in, to hide, to go run away, to let fear totally smother the discovery of what we are. And this is where I think you and I, and having such programs as this, and even the brave ones that will come forward and listen to this program with us, that's where we are, and that's who we are. And that has to be strong enough to stand against the resistance of that. And to actually know that we know more inside that beautiful cerebellum in our brain, that there's far more than every book and every library and every generation that has ever occupied this earth and this planet. And to understand that the very core of what we are is in the very core of what the planet is. And with all of the peoples that I've associated with and my own adventures, that takes us far, far beyond words. When you have these experiences, you try to tell people what they were, and it sounds so flat. You've gone back and tried to talk about your journeys and stuff. It's so flat. It's like trying to go stand before the Grand Canyon and see the winds blowing through it and the eagles flying and every magnificent part of it, then take a picture. And then you go home and you pull that picture out. Oh, not even a sand-sized stone could be there. You cannot grab it from that picture. And that's what we're looking at, that this is in us. That magnificence and that grandeur is in us. And whatever it is that tries to suppress it is afraid of us understanding that. In our particular existence, every one of us, the frontier, we are the pilgrims. We are the frontier of this. And we have to be as strong in tenacity as ever our forefathers ever was. And that through our show and reading such books and coming to such discussions, we put our heart into it, and our listeners feel that. And I am ever so grateful that you, as my co-host, come and we sit and we talk and we share. We have a blast of a time. And this is exactly what makes things and what makes people get up and think. So do you have anything else you want to add in the few minutes we have here? I get carried away, don't I? You all are sitting here still. It's like I go off. Once I get off, you have to kind of knock on the head here to call me back. But yeah, you got to have something that you want to share real quick here.
I certainly would not want to call you back, grandmother. Oh my goodness, that was amazing. I certainly would not want you to come back from that. That's awesome what you shared. Thank you for that. Yeah. Sorry, Rosemary, you were talking.
Thank you very much for that. But you are the same. All of you are the same. You know that once you get in, you just want more. This is so funny, because one thing I'm going to share in these last minutes is that we do walkabouts, which is a term that we get from your place down under there in Australia, where the natives actually say they do the walkabout, okay? And so I've gone through actually inviting people to go on a walkabout with me. To anymore, it's not so popular, because once we get going, I don't know when to stop. So they think, oh, we're going to go for a week or two, and then a month later, and then 6 weeks later. Then they begin to say, well, are we going home? And it's like, well, we'll know when we get there, right? So it's like once the journey starts, you cannot squelch the fire and the curiosity of it. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're seeding that in everything we share. So come on, somebody give me a few minutes, few words here in closing. We got about 4 minutes.
Well, I just want to say it's not the Grand Canyon, but we have spring here. And it's close to it. I've been outside and I made a picture, and it does not represent what you feel when you see the Earth's mother bringing spring up, you know. Yeah. And then on top of it, knowing that the scientific part of it makes it so much more touching, and you can experience the sensuality of spring, and at the same time, I'm aware of the science behind it and the black hole and all the mechanics of what I've learned, and it's just really broadening everything. So
it's so beautiful, Rosemary. Thank you. Anyone else? Come on, Mike.
Yeah, I was just going to. I think I did let some people know about a program I saw on TV about black holes. And what this program was written, I think, in 2018, it was published. And if you've had a hard time visualizing the material coming out of the black hole, you know, we all get the old picture of the swirling disk sucking everything in. Well, if you want to really see how that material gets ejected out, this program on how the universe works called Black Holes is just awesome. It has some great videos that illustrate that, and you can kind of see, okay, that's how it works. So that was just my little plug for, if you get a chance to see that video, it really helps solidify in your mind some of the concepts we've been talking
about. Give us the name again. What's the name of it?
The program, I saw it on the Discovery Channel, and it was called How the Universe Works. It's a series, and they had a specific program called Black Holes Make Us. And it's all about how black holes are actually at the beginning of everything, which sounds pretty familiar to what we've been reading.
All right. Let's get our listeners watching that. They'll understand us more when we're talking off the tab here. Anyone else? Come on. We got a couple of minutes. You got things to say.
I'd like to just share for a minute. I know when you asked why was I drawn to this book? I know I have this deep, deep yearning to understand or even be exposed to the mystery, to something that's not explainable. There's something so magical for me in that. And then the desire to be exposed to a life experience that at this moment, beyond my dreams. And the way he ends this particular section in this book is people come back having had, knowing they were there, knowing they were in the inner earth, but they can't talk about it. They don't remember. So I want to go there and come back and remember.
All right, fantastic. Anyone else? Okay, we're gonna draw it to conclusion. And so again, this is Parisha, your host, and I thank you very much for joining us this week as we were about halfway into the book now, Inside the Earth by Radu Chandsinamar. And we're looking forward to our co-hosts, Trina Cooper, joining us again next week. But meanwhile, if you have this book, please go back through what we've shared, and we've actually stopped on 109. So we started on 94, we went over to 109, and actually read and look at the illustrations that's there. And please, we actually can get the book if you want to go to Amazon, and that you can actually begin to read it even long after we've moved on past it to another book in our book club here. This would be a book that you would want to sit with again, okay? And actually understand and give it time to absorb how the particular material in this book is as much a teaching as ever it could be a story. Okay. And we thank you very much and have a fantastic week. Stay clear, stay focused, and open your mind to every wonderful, wonderful breath that you take. OCO.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.